2020 meeting of Desert Community Energy Board into session. So roll call.
Palm Springs.
Here.
Cathedral City.
Here.
Palm Desert.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay. Next item is public comment on agenda items. Any person wishing to address Desert Community Energy Board on items appearing on this agenda may do so at this time. Please limit comments to 3 minutes at the discretion of the chair. Additional public comment time and our opportunities during the meeting may be granted. So I have one, not really note card, ripped piece of paper. So we'll start with David Friedman, but if there are other people who want to speak, we'll just raise your hands and we'll go around so everyone have an opportunity. David, please.
Good afternoon, board members. My name is David Friedman. As you know, I chair the DC Community Advisory Committee. For the record, I am speaking in my individual capacity and not on behalf of the CAC. I was pleased to see that staff prepared a recommendation of the net energy metering program on item 6C of your agenda, as I requested at your last meeting. I agree that the best approach would be to launch the program at parity with Southern California Edison and then determine what other solar options can be explored consistent with the action taken by the DC board at its June 2018 meeting. I also agree that the end of May is the best best time for the annual true-up. That is my own true-up time, as my solar PV system was connected to the SCE grid in May 2009, and I build up large credits each spring that offset my net electricity use earlier in the 12-month period. However, I do not agree with staff's suggestion to defer launching an NEM program at parity with SCE until May 2021, as opposed to launching in May 2020, shortly after DC launches for non-NEM customers in Palm Springs. I did not see any justification in the staff report for this delay, particularly since the report said there are no additional costs to DCE other than some administrative costs. Based on a recent study, at least 11% of Palm Springs homes have solar panels. By excluding them from the first year of operations, DCE would likely lose the best community ambassadors for the carbon-free product, as they would not be likely to opt down or opt out, given their commitment to renewable energy. DCE would also lose the only locally generated source for the carbon-free product. As part of my duties as CAC member to promote DCE, I would love to tell my neighbors that the carbon-free energy that they are buying through DCE comes in part from the rooftops at Palm Springs, such as my own. I therefore urge you to launch the NEM program in Palm Springs at parity with SCE this May instead of May 2021. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. On this side? Yeah.
Yes. My name is Joseph Hummel. I'm a resident property owner in Palm Desert. I'm kind of like the farmer's insurance guy. Know a lot of things because I've seen a lot of things. And I have 25, 30 years of public policy experience in the telecommunications and energy industries. I participated in the breakup of AT&T and the transit, really, and the full competition in the telecom industry. I can tell you, that's exactly what's going to happen in this electric utility industry. It's already happening. We're going to go to full competition once again, led by mostly renewable rooftop solar, energy management technologies, and microgrids. In this county, in the Coachella Valley, we have an opportunity to address the fact that about 100,000 homes here are homes in which people leave during the peak months of the summer, SE's peak period. And I agree with the gentleman that you should go forward with the NEM program immediately. I own commercial buildings in the state of Hawaii, and I have both NEM and feed-in tariff systems on those buildings. I sell power directly to Maui Electric. You need to put that program in place. But in addition, I think what we're missing in the SCE NEM program is currently constituted that the excess generation that one could have and available during peak periods, when you couple renewable, solar energy with batteries, particularly solid-state batteries that are right down the road and going to come into the technology mix, you've got the opportunity to capture both the geographic and temporal values that you have from that storage. And in a NEM program, just like they do in Marin Community Energy, the CCA out there, they pay you, they will pay you up to $5,000 per year for energy that you can contribute, particularly during your peak periods. They pay you, they continue the exchange basically, and in fact they'll pay you cash for, again, up to $5,000 of surplus energy that you send into the grid. That's different from what SCE does. They will only pay you at current wholesale rates 3.5 cents for that surplus power. And anyway, there's new horizons to explore in NEM. A lot of the CCAs are doing them, and you know, look at them closely and adopt.
Great. Thank you very much. You had your hand up?
Fred Noble. It's an idea. Time has finally come. We thought 40 years ago when we started wind energy in the desert that it would be a matter of a year or two before we'd be able to deliver power to neighbors and to developments on our land. And it took 40 years to get here, but here we are. An idea whose time has come. I don't want to comment on net energy metering. You guys will do what you think is best. I do know that Raj Maharaj is moving that way. Gentleman mentioned breaking up the phone company. It's important to remember that before the phone company was broken up, there were no cell phones. And that the breaking up of the phone company led to all this diverse technology, all the related stuff on their wires. And that's what's going to happen here. We'll look back in 5 or 10 years and be astonished at all of the technology that develops, things we haven't heard about yet, the minute you break the monopoly of the control of the wires. And that's kind of what you're doing here. And so my hat's off to you. And it's nothing earth-shaking. There's no big risk here. Marin County's done it for a long time. I don't think there's ever been a CCA that gotten in trouble in California. So I think you take it and run with it. You're going to be very, very happy you did it.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. So that will end public comment. Next is board member director comments. So, and I think both of you, I don't know if you've had your study sessions yet or not, but it would be great to know that as well.
We have not had our study session scheduled yet. I think we're looking actually at the first meeting in March.
Great.
So looking forward to reporting back.
Great.
Thank you. We did have our study session last week. We had a presentation by the staff member in charge of this area, and that's Ryan Stendell, who's here. And also here is my colleague on council, Mayor Pro Tem Kathleen Kelly. They'll both keep me honest if I stray in my report. So we had an overall report, and then we had DCE had an opportunity to add to the presentation, as did Southern California Edison. The main focus was, you know, gaining more of an understanding. We're here at every meeting. I think we're a little bit ahead on the knowledge curve with some of our colleagues on our respective councils. So that was the main purpose. But there was, I think, expansive discussion on the CARE and FERA program, particularly as it relates to our city, because we're not launching, but we are participating in the CARE and FERA program. So we had presentation on that from DCE and from Lift to Rise. And I thought it was a very constructive study session.
Great. Anything else either? No. I know we have an information item on Community Advisory Committee report, and I don't know if this will be part of this or not, but for the next meeting, can we have maybe a discussion on that a little bit, and particularly since Palm Springs is the only city launching now, there's different types of work probably for the Community Advisory than in the other cities. Obviously, the CARE and FERA are important to all three cities. And I don't know if they should have some additional meetings in Palm Springs just for that group. And just, you know, not to deliberate it now, but that have that conversation on how we do that, given the need to do community outreach in Palm Springs is at a different level for the next, at least, period, short period, a couple months until this gets off the ground, and then when people start getting their bills.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. There is kind of a bifurcation. The outreach is really in two parts right now,
right.
Kind of two silos.
Yeah.
One is the launch issues in Palm
right.
Springs, and the other, of course, is CARE, FERA,
right.
Which I know we're discussing that later on the agenda,
yeah.
But I'm sure there'll be a point where we get a more detailed report from probably Lift to Rise on that part.
Okay, great.
I would just agree.
Yeah. Okay, great.
So we'll put it on the
yeah,
agenda and give you some options to consider.
Maybe get some input from the working group folks, especially in Palm Springs, on what they think would work.
We'll work with your chairman in particular, but certainly touch base with others.
Great. Okay, next item is the consent calendar. So there's one item, approved minutes from the board meeting of December 9th, 2019. Do we have a motion to approve minutes?
Oh, approval.
Second.
Okay.
Sorry.
Motion on the table and seconded. All in favor? Aye.
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 Okay. Motion carries. Okay, next is 6, discussion and action items. 6A is CC program schedule and activities update.
Just got a brief update, part of which you all have covered. We know that Palm Springs will be launching in April. With 100% carbon-free is the default product here. We're going to be talking in much more detail about that in the next agenda item. This is wrong now. We thought we might have a study session January 22nd. It'll be in early March, I gather.
Sure.
And then a study session just occurred in Palm Desert, as Mr. Jonathan pointed out. And in addition to Mr. Jonathan's comments, I gather there was a discussion at the City Council meeting about agendizing consideration of purchasing 100% green carbon-free power, whether it's through Edison or DCE, so that'll be on a future agenda item, I gather.
Yeah, that's from all our municipal accounts, and will probably be part of our budget discussion, which is coming up in a month or two.
March.
Yeah. That's 2 months.
So that's another pending item. Just to remind you of activities, and particularly those in the room that may not be that familiar with Desert Community Energy. We did launch our utility discount supplemental or encouragement or enroll more people program on January 1st. We don't have an extensive report on this agenda. It just did launch. We've got a written status report there. I'd be happy to address any questions. Both Lift to Rise representatives as well as DCE staff are here to do that. Enrollment notices do go out in the next couple of weeks. We've put on your table draft enrollment notices, brochure, and a little sticker that we'll make available to folks that sign up to get the word out on the 100% carbon-free. These are all draft. Of particular note, the enrollment notice, we're on a very short fuse on that one. What I'd ask is if you do have any comments, to get those to us in the next day or two. The chairman and I briefly discussed maybe some modifications based on whatever rates are approved today, and just make sure that we are absolutely accurate in the way we characterize the program and don't surprise anybody later. So, again, launch is in April, and we've got a lot going on in the next couple of months, and somewhat, of course, related, which is, as the chairman pointed out, getting the word out in Palm Springs. I would suggest, but really defer to the chair and the board, that many of our meetings occur in Palm Springs just as a part of the public outreach, whether it's next month. We haven't set the place for that. Doesn't have to be every meeting, but I'd say a majority over the next 2 months we have in Palm Springs just to give the public an opportunity to sit in. And I defer to the three of you, obviously.
Thank you. Any questions, comments?
No, but I do think having meetings locally would be appropriate.
And perhaps after a study session, we do in the cathedral, maybe the, following the study session, we target Cathedral City for a TCU meeting as well.
Of course.
Does that make sense?
And so, do we have any discussion on any of these now, or would you rather just us send you individual feedback?
You certainly can. You also haven't had much time to read it. So
yeah.
If you have comments now, we'll take them, and we'll also give you a day or two to review it and provide comments individually as well.
Okay. If this changes, can we get a copy of the final?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm going to have a couple comments and suggestions. So,
all right.
But I can turn it over.
Sounds good.
Right. Go over. Okay, thank you. So the next item is approved Desert Community Energy Rate Schedule.
This is an important time in the process of moving forward with DCE. Just a quick overview of the rate overview. We'll talk about the product offerings, the rates that have been set, and get some input from you as members of the board. A little bit of information about how we will distribute rate information to customers. And then a particular item that is in your staff report with regard to the low-income or Care-Fair customers and how we want to handle those folks with respect to the 100% carbon-free. So, and I will also just appreciate that Jeff Fuller and Jacqueline Haar from the Energy Authority are here. The Energy Authority is the consultant that prepares the rate schedule for us and helps us with all of that information. So questions could be answered and addressed by Jacqueline and Jeff. So this just is a kind of a review with the product offerings. Our carbon-free, which is the default for the city of Palm Springs, that is a 50% renewable and 100% carbon-free. That goes back to the decision the board made in 2018 to provide a really focus on carbon-free electricity and our greenhouse gas reduction goals. The Desert Saver, we have modified this to make sure we could offer as much of a discount as possible for the Desert Saver. So actually the renewable content is 35%. It could be a little bit less than that, although we're looking at ways to obviously provide as much renewable energy in our product as possible, and that will be as we go forward in the procurement. There are some assumptions here. That is that approximately 10% of the customers would opt out of the program and remain with Southern California Edison, and 10% of the customers would have the choice if they want to go to the lower cost alternative, the Desert Saver, they can opt down. And I will say we will spend a lot of effort in our notices and other outreach, and especially on the website, to help make sure folks understand those choices and that they can opt down if they choose to do that, still be in DCE, but have a lower cost option. In general, the rates have been set to follow the rates and rate classes and categories used by Southern California Edison. And as I know we mentioned in our last meeting, one of the reasons we do this in January is Edison has just finalized, as of the 1st of January, their rates for 2020. So we appreciate the efforts of TEA to pull the information together for you.
Katie, do you want us to interrupt with questions?
Sure.
As you go
anytime.
On. Okay, just yes. On the classes, it came up at the study session. I think when we say 100% carbon-free, 50% renewable, that's actually a different mix. It's not exactly apples to apples to what you would get if you made that election with Edison.
That's correct. So the product that we're offering is 100% carbon-free, but that does incorporate some large hydroelectric. And Jeff, I don't know if you want to elaborate a little bit on that, but I'll just finish the difference is Edison's 100% green rate, and I think that's sort of the general category, if you will. Currently, Edison is offering 100% green renewable energy, and that is a solar product. So ours would be a combination.
Yes, probably solar, wind, and
some solar, some wind,
and large
some
hydro.
Large hydro, it's more of a combination.
Okay. Thank you.
The way the rates have been set up is the Desert Saver is the basic product, and that comes at about 0.5% discount. That is, these numbers are on the total bill. The carbon-free premium product, we're looking at just under 10%, a 9.75% rate on that. And that was, you know, something we had some uncertainty about where that would fall, and part of that really ties into the cost of electricity and some of the other factors.
And that, again, is on the total bill.
Yes. The rates do vary, so these are examples, and I do have an example. This is the same as what was in your agenda packet, and I want to point out that we will be providing this kind of comparative information on our website. So this is a typical residential bill, and it's showing you the rates And I started actually with the green rate. So looking at there's a summer bill. Of course, we all know our summer bills are a lot higher. And the winter bill, and then an average. So I'm just using the average as a point of comparison. On the Edison green rate, which we just talked about, that's 100% renewable. And comparing that to the DCE carbon-free, there is a slight savings for folks who would choose to go with DCE. And again, these are based on an average bill that we've kind of estimated using the load data for our region. Similarly, for the Edison baseline rate, comparing that to the Desert Saver, there's a slight savings there as well. So this would be something, like I say, that the customers would be able to take a look at on the website, and it is an average, but it does give them an idea of the differences. And the next one is similarly a commercial bill, and I just picked, in this case, the green rate just for comparison to just show you. On the right would be the DCE carbon-free. Again, these are average numbers for an average bill, and the Edison green rate, so just to show you that comparison, the slight savings between our carbon-free and the Edison green rate. Excuse me. On the website, there will be information so that folks can understand, and this is actually what the bill will look like for DCE customers. It would be a page that identifies the amount of electricity coming from DCE, and it breaks it out as the generation charges. This is one of the roles. You know, we have a consultant, Calpine, and one of the roles that Calpine has is to make sure that all of the billing information coming from Edison is accurate, and they will be working very closely with Edison so that there are a very high accuracy rate on those billing statements. And also, there is a phone number. We would have a ability for a customer, if they had a concern, if there was a problem with their bill, or they had a question about the rates, they can call that number, and they will be helped. Questions would be answered. That's our customer service number.
Who is providing that?
That actually is a service that Calpine provides. They have a call center, and we work with them on the script for that. And, you know, there might be an occasion where a call would actually be bumped up to us, but in most cases, they'd be able to answer the typical questions. They do that for most of the CCAs in the state.
Katie, Ms. Chair,
yeah.
Can I ask a question? This may be a more basic question regarding the rates, but can someone explain to me the product procurement process, the actual cash flow of how this is going to work? I'm particularly interested in if any of the $4 or $5 million that we have in reserve is going to be leveraged at all or used up in this particular process. Can someone explain that to me?
Jeff,
do
you want to answer procurement?
Sure. I'll take a shot and
okay.
Let me know if you're not. So as far as it, yes, it will be leveraged, but it really will go to help cash flow. And ultimately, we're showing DCE accumulating financial reserves over time.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that it will be leveraged at the start is that generally when you procure power supplies, you pay 30 days in arrear. So we'll go out on your behalf, begin to procure power supplies for the month of April, and you'll pay for that power during the month of May. So that's what's happening on the expense side. On the revenue side, there's approximately...
Wait, and then do you advance the funds for that?
We will if needed to do that.
Okay. And is there a cost to that?
Yeah, we are charging what is referred to as a credit solution fee. There's a $1 per megawatt hour charge, so it's a 0.1 cent per kilowatt hour charge for that. And this is one component of that. The other piece is that when we go procure power supply, counterparties look to the overall creditworthiness of the counterparty that's buying. You know, just like when a bank makes a loan,
sure.
They want to know that they're going to get paid back. When the market looks to DCE, at least at launch, they'll look to TEA or the Energy Authority for that. So that's the other component of that credit solution fee. So anyway, there's a 30-day lag. So again, for the month of April, we'll procure power supplies in advance of April. We actually started last week doing that on your behalf. But you'll pay during the month of May for April, June you'll pay for May, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then the revenues, though, there's approximately a 50 to 60 day time lag on the revenues coming in, because you'll go through the month of April, and then customers are billed in arrears, so then you'll actually bill the customer after the month is done, and then they have another period of time before they pay. So a little hand-wavy, but it's approximately a 30-day lag for paying power supply expenses, but there's roughly a 50-day lag for when customers pay for their charges, so that there is that drawdown of cash to help with that float, if that's the right way to think about it.
So it sounds like there may be some risk involved.
There's always risk in operating, but you know, over time, though, what'll happen is, you know, the biggest risk is you go procure power supplies and the customers don't show up. Mm-hmm. But once you know if they opt out, we would no longer procure power supplies for them. So at the outset, you do tend to keep the power supply procurement shorter term to help mitigate mm-hmm. that risk in part. The other way that we will adjust that is Katie mentioned there's underlying these assumptions is a 10% opt-out mm-hmm. rate. We actually assume that when we go do the procurement as well, and we won't procure right up to 90% of that. On a forward mm-hmm. basis, ultimately you have to procure the power supplies to do it, but we'll keep some of it shorter term to help mitigate that risk.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
Just a quick follow-up on that. Thank you. So what are the mechanics of the revenue to DCE? Because the customer pays Edison.
Correct.
And so Edison hopefully accurately tracks what portion. Because a portion of what the customer pays belongs to Edison, a portion belongs to DCE. So hopefully Edison tracks that and then remits DCE's portion to us.
Correct. And that's, I'm going to speak for my Calpine colleagues on their behalf. This is one of the things that they do as part of the back office. But Edison actually is also metering the customers right now. So Edison, the way that the process works, Edison will notify Calpine of how much each customer used during the billing period. Calpine will apply DCE's rate schedules to that usage, give that back to Edison, and this all happens very quickly. It's all automated. Edison then, as you point out, will invoice the customers on your behalf, and the DCE charges will actually show up on everyone's Edison invoice. Then the customer will pay Edison in total. They won't write separate checks for DCE and Edison. They'll just be one number. They'll pay their bill. And then Edison will remit those funds into DCE's account. And I believe it's within one day of actually taking the receipt of the money. And that's, again, that's part of Calpine's job. They'll track that those funds came in from which customers. If there's any customers that are late on payments, then Calpine will let Edison know. And actually, Edison is obligated then to go try to collect those.
And that's kind of where I was heading with Councilmember Aguilar's point in terms of the risk. If a customer doesn't pay, it's still the same procedure where Edison ultimately can cut off the power or
yes.
whatever.
Correct.
That's correct.
And Edison retains the obligation to go collect the funds from the customers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One of the items that was described in your staff report would relates to how to treat low-income customers. Some of the other CCAs have made a choice to allow, especially those more recently, the Clean Power Alliance, which kind of started the choice between the premium product and the base product. The issue is, do you want to have the low-income customers enrolled in 100% carbon-free? As your staff report describes, there would be a cost to that, and that could be handled in a number of different ways. Basically, what we've described is a couple of options. So the 100% carbon-free, obviously, as we've mentioned, comes at a 9.75% premium. And so one option would be for, as Palm Springs has chosen that default, all of those customers would be enrolled at 100% carbon-free, and they would pay a slightly higher rate. They would have the choice then of opting out, or if they wanted to do so, they could also, opting down to Desert Saver, or they could also opt out and stay with Edison if they chose to do that. So under that scenario, Those would be the options. The other option that we described is that the cost of that would actually be covered by the remainder of the customers, the other non-Carefera customers. I should mention this also applies to the medical baseline customers. So they would then, and it's described in your staff report, there would be a slight increase then on the cost to the regular customers, the non-Carefera customers. And we wanted to bring this to your attention to get some feedback from you with regard to a couple of different options here. As is described, the total cost of that would actually be about $786,000, although under either of these scenarios, it would be paid either by the Carefera customer or by the remainder of the customers and spread across the, everybody else, essentially. So we'd like to get some direction from you on that aspect.
Come on, so I can go. So one question is, if we did spread it, we're putting ourselves over 10%, right, which I have some concern with doing. So, and I don't know if there are other ways to potentially cover the costs, right? I mean, obviously, we're building reserves through this year. How much would that dent the reserves that we'd be building there, sort of Palm Springs specific, if we kept it at 10%? Because as a policy, and based on the polling we've always discussed, we wouldn't go over 10% more, and I think that should be our policy, and I think that's what we should be sharing with the community, that, you know, we're committed to keeping this at no more than 10%. I think that's important, I think, for a lot of reasons.
Perhaps have Jeff comment. You could also split the baby. You could not increase everybody else's rates by 0.75%, increase everybody else's rates by 0.25 or 0.4, or whatever you want to do, and increase Carefera customers. And perhaps Jeff could comment too. One kind of related to Mr. Aguilar's comment earlier about the reserves. The sooner we get reserves up, everybody's rates decrease. So this could also be a short-term consideration, but our target, if I remember correctly, Jeff, is to get to over $5 million of reserves. That's not far off in terms of our reserves. We obviously have expenses on the Carefera program that are, I think, a very good investment by the board, but that will draw down on expenses as well as typical operating expenses. But it is a consideration that the sooner we get there, it's easier for us to deal with. Jeff comments, if we kept our overall increase to just under, minuscule under 10%, what do you think about the financial impact?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, round numbers, and I think Katie mentioned this, we're estimating at the assumptions in here that the overall amount we're talking about is $786,000, right, which equates to about 0.75%. So again, you know, admittedly kind of very rough back of the envelope here on the fly, but it, you know, to Tom's point, if you split that into thirds, you've got, you know, one third of that you could adjust and still stay within your 10% or close to a third. The other thing, when we've done the financial projections, 2020 has been fine. Where the $5 million gets challenged is actually in 2021 when we're projecting. Obviously, it's based on assumptions right now. So there's, you know, the potential of 2020 numbers, actual procurement costs coming in better than what we're currently assuming. You know, that could make up some ground. But the flip side of that is it could get worse as well. So when we were looking at the numbers, you know, 2020 wasn't so much the problem. It's, you know, really being able to maintain it into 2021. But, yeah, I mean.
And perhaps sure for your consideration, it you could cap this below 10%, and we come back to you with a mid-year report on the impact as we foresee it. And there'll still be uncertainty, particularly with respect to, you know next year's SCE rates, et cetera. But we could come back 6 months after launch and let you know how we're doing. Summer is a good time for DCE, and that works in both directions. That's when we want to make our money, because we lose it much of the rest of the year. But that that's an option. If you set a cap of under 10% and fully subsidize the care of your customers, we can come back in 6 months and let you know how that plays out in terms of cash flow.
Which might make sense. I mean, I think especially given, right, when we, things always change, and we know that, but, you know, when we voted on this as a council, it was going to be no more than 10%, and I think we want to keep it just under 10%. And I think for educating the public when they're first enrolling, I think we start getting over 10%, just changes the dynamic of what we've been talking about. So
that concern is for your general population.
Right. So one option is we slightly subsidize, right, the care and fair people,
no,
or there's no subsidies for them. Right. And that's,
or you keep it under 10% and fully subsidize, knowing that on paper things look even worse for 2021, but we come back and check in with, which we would anyway, in 6 months, and see how cash flow is reacting to what the market is actually producing.
Right. But let's say that was negative, right? We were not happy with that. What can we change in 6 months then to address it?
You could have Carefira pony up and pay their fair share of the cost of 100% carbon-free in part, or you could raise the base rate, or both. Not the base rate, the 100% carbon-free for everybody else. You can make adjustments across, just like you're doing now.
When you say, for example, that let's say that the subsidy by non-Carefira ratepayers is, let's say, 0.2%, then the other 0.55 would still be subsidized under what you're describing, but it would come out of DCE funds?
Potentially.
Potentially.
Again, our cash flow looks good this year, even if you were to take this action, I believe.
Yes.
2020 would still be in the black, and so money wouldn't come out of reserves, if you want to call it that, in 2020.
But in
2021, if we kept that same policy under our current projections, we go into the red even more than we're projecting to go into the red.
Regardless of how the numbers look, I mean, structurally, I just want to understand this option that you're describing is that ratepayers do part of the subsidy, but the other part of the subsidy to get to the full 0.75% subsidy for Carefira customers, the rest of that subsidy, whatever it is, would come out of DCE funds. I just want to understand that option.
Well, there's no other source.
Yeah. Well, we'd be building, really what we'd be doing is, on this year, we'd be building, if everything goes accordingly, mm-hmm. a little bit less of that reserve pool that, you know, we have Palm Springs reserved as 1 year. So that would be a little smaller for this year.
Yeah, and
that's
I'm saying before even going to the math, in terms of whether it'd be DC funding the rest of the subsidy. I mean, it's either the rest of the ratepayers or it's DC.
Well, no, I think the difference is we're also, there's some additional money being made on all those bills, right? Yeah. You're getting more than just what people, their electricity. That money's going into a reserve account. So it would be some of that extra reserve would be what's being used.
So I think we're saying the same thing.
So it's not yet DCE's money. It's the customer's money. It's just we're allocating some of their money for the Carefira people.
Okay, if we weren't doing that,
the money would go into our reserves.
Yeah.
And those are our choices, but the money doesn't exist now.
Okay.
So we're not going into the existing reserves.
No.
We're going in. We're just changing the allocation with how much reserves we expect to build this year.
Yeah.
That's all.
So the only comment I have, and personally, I really feel as though, I mean, you know, these are your residents, and this is something that I would depend strongly on your opinion about in Palm Springs. But I think this is a perfect topic of discussion, or could have been potentially, for the advisory committee. I understand that there was a timing issue and it could not have been discussed in order to get it on our agenda. But is there a critical reason why this particular decision on this subsidy needs to be made today? Or could it be discussed by the advisory committee at their next meeting, and then we could then incorporate their recommendation into our final decision at the next meeting in February?
Jeff, we're setting rates today, and we're getting notices out
early February.
Yeah, it would seem the decision should be made today, but correct me if I'm wrong.
I would agree with that.
And with respect to the advisory committee, for some of the same reasons it was brought up by the chair, the advisory committee include 2/3 of its members are from the other two cities, which is a factor too, and may not be as tied into issues and concerns in Palm Springs as they are in Cathedral City and Palm Desert. And that's something we plan on addressing and giving you some options to consider at the next meeting. Because certainly having their advice along the way is useful.
I mean,
and as a reminder, this board will be charged with setting rates at least once a year, but you could set rates 15 times a year. Mm-hmm. So this is not a done deal by any stretch of the imagination, and the board can and should make adjustments. It's one of the great things about CCAs that Mr. Fred Noble talked about 5 years ago when he came to CBAC to talk about them. You're the board, and you'll be able to make adjustments on the fly with information that is timely and forward-thinking.
So I want to understand to what extent the non-participating cities are impacted. Let's just take a situation, a scenario where there's no subsidy, Care Clearer. So the $500,000 to $700,000, depending on what you subsidize, let's just say it's $500,000, would actually come into the reserves for DC. Okay, so if we're at $4 million, we'd go to $4.5 million. And those reserves are not allocated specifically between three cities. They're just DCE funds.
I thought what we did was for, if only one city is participating, those reserves are allocated for that city.
They will be in the future,
right.
I think.
Yeah.
Mr. Jonathan's referring to the reserves as they stand today.
Right, but we wouldn't be using those reserves for this. It would be out of, I mean.
We wouldn't be. The reason it was difficult to answer the question earlier, if there's a deficit, how would it affect the reserves? We are not projecting, even if you capped it at 10% this year, cap the rate increase, and fully subsidized Carafura customers so they had no impact on their bill, we would not expect on paper an impact on our reserves, because in 2020 we'll be in the black substantially enough. The impact is looking forward based on what we think we know today in 2021. So we don't believe there'd be an impact on reserves. If there is an impact on reserves based on the changes in the JPA, we will separately account for those. And Palm Springs customers will pay the reserve back one way or the other through essentially rate setting by the DCE board. So as of launch, and actually pre-launch, Palm Springs launch activities are tracked separately. And if it does affect reserves, we'll track those as a negative entry in our spreadsheet related to Palm Springs activities.
So let's look at it the other way. Let's just say there's no subsidy whatsoever. So there'd be an anticipated positive net income, positive net revenue.
There's in both cases in 2020.
But I mean an additional,
yes, there'd be
like $786,000 or whatever, yes, whatever that number is. Those funds would go into the DC reserve, but would they essentially belong to Palm Springs under our current structure, or would they go into a general DC reserve?
Palm Springs.
Okay.
Thanks to the language that somebody drafted here.
Exactly. And I just want to be, the reason I'm pounding on that is if we're going to take a vote, I need to be able to answer to my council that, and what I'm hearing is Palm Desert, for example, and Cathedral City are not affected, because if whatever we do in terms of subsidizing results in a deficit, it'll be up to Palm Springs resident payers to restore that deficit. And if there's a net revenue generated, that goes to the credit of Palm Springs.
There's a...
Both ways.
Yeah, and there's a bit of realpolitik here. two-thirds of the members of this governing board control rates, and they don't reside in Palm Springs. If you saw something negative happening in the reserve, you could initiate a rate increase with or without Palm Springs support. Now, I don't think we'll ever get there, but just note, you control the reserves and the rate setting. The majority does.
Well, yes, but we're taking a vote today. We can't change in the future. But as we take a vote today, I want to be able to make sure I can answer the question. If I'm asked, well, why did you vote for, in my case, Palm Desert, to take on additional liability by subsidizing Care and Fira customers in Palm Springs, I can answer based on what I heard today, I didn't. That potential obligation falls on Palm Springs ratepayers. Conversely, if I'm asked, well, wait a minute, why did you give away DC reserves to subsidize Palm Springs residents, Care Fira residents, I can say I didn't, because if Palm Springs didn't do that, those excess revenues would inure to Palm Springs.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
So if we choose not to do any subsidy, those that are in the Care Fira program will not get the benefit of anything above the 35% option?
No, the answer is they would. If there's no subsidy, then they pay 9.75% more for their current on their current rates.
Unless they opt out.
Yeah, right. And that is...
Or opt down.
Does the Care and Fira discount still apply to the 100% carbon-free option? They'll get it off their full bill.
Yes.
So there is already some level of subsidy through Care and Fira.
But they would see an increase.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
So let me just through Vice Chair's comments, which is, I know you need us to set rates today, but a month from now we can change those, because it's a little hard for me to vote on what we do here without any council input, because we're going above, one way we're going above the threshold that we had discussed, which we didn't expect, but that's where we are. The other way, people on lower income are going to see some rate increase, and maybe they see less of a rate increase. I mean, that's a conversation, I think, that should occur at a council meeting before a final decision is made. So if we set rates today, whichever way we go, we can come back in a month and change that, right, before anyone ever gets a bill.
Yes, although we've got notices going out. One in between is if you are confident that your colleagues on the council will agree with you that the increase should be no more than 9.99%, we'll know that that is firm and could be memorialized in various collateral material. We could hold off on some of the details related to Care and Fira until you meet again.
Yeah. I mean, in the notice, it doesn't have percentages.
But we will be publishing our rates.
You know, how I can ever be confident of what three people do on a city council? I've been surprised before. But I would assume they would probably just, given I'm the most involved, and they would probably be on the same page. I can't guarantee it, but I think they would want to keep us just under the 10%. And that's what I would recommend. So given that, I think that would be likely. I think there might be more issue on whether we subsidize an additional subsidy for people on the Care Fira or not, and how that would work. And especially as we're enrolling more people into that program, you know, how that plays out.
Yeah.
When is your next council meeting?
On the 30th.
I mean, maybe that's too late in terms of the rollout.
We don't have to identify the specifics in the first enrollment notice.
So can we take action that's then subject to approval by the Palm Springs Council, which gives you, Jeff, a little bit of leeway in case they see it differently than you?
Would you get it on that agenda?
You could, and it could be an automatic, you know, assuming there's not a substantial impact on reserves or any other policy. The city of Palm Springs makes an adjustment, it could even be automatically reflected if you want to provide that guidance in your motion. And we could also set a meeting the next day. There's no You've got a lot of flexibility on this board. Do you want to meet a day after the city meets? That's fine, too.
So what do you need to do today? Just what the rate is going to be? Do you need to know what we're doing with CareFera?
I think ideally we would know at least what the percent adjustment is that we're going to apply to create the rates.
To CareFera?
Well,
ideally, but we're not ideal because this is all news and within a couple days.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it's what's the adjustment on the rates now that that adjustment is influenced or affected by what the CareFera subsidy is, because that's one of the components into how the rates get set. But ultimately it's the what is the adjustment. So I think if we wanted to take the 9, or if you wanted to take the 9.75 and go to 9.99, because, you know, under any circumstance you would at least provide that level of subsidy, I think that would be sufficient for today's action.
So it would set the rate for everyone at the 9.99 and then come back with CareFera, whether they're being subsidized or not.
One advantage of that is,
which I think is more challenging,
TEA will have 30 more days in the market. And you know, they're just starting to hedge in the last 2 weeks. We'll have a better understanding of the marketplace and maybe provide some guidance on the meeting on the 30th, but more guidance and more the options and the implications that you are on next meeting in 30 days.
So I'm sorry, so are we deferring action on the CareFera subsidy?
Yeah, whether they're going to be subsidized or not, which is not. We'd just be setting the rate.
So may I make a request? So is there not an advisory committee meeting this week?
Yes, there is.
Is there a reason why this could not be discussed at that meeting?
Especially among the Palm Springs folks. Right?
Particularly from the Palm Springs folks.
And those,
I'm thinking particularly of those low-income advisory committee members who are directly impacted by this decision. So if that's possible, I would like to include that in our action.
Okay. The agenda's gone out, and there's always a standing CareFera item on there, so we can discuss it.
Yeah. Okay, perfect.
So I thought you needed a decision about the CareFera subsidy.
We preferred it, strongly preferred it, but we are, given the substantial policy implications, a decision on overall rates, if it is just under 10%, is sufficient for now, and in the next 30 days we'll be seeking more specific guidance on CareFera and how to handle it.
Okay, but if we take action to set rates at under 10%, we can reasonably project that there will be a subsidy, because that's only increasing ratepayers by less than 0.25%. And my understanding is that to avoid any subsidy or to fully fund the subsidy, the non-CareFera ratepayers would be paying 0.75 additional. So they'd be paying 10.5, they're only going to pay just under 10. So the delta, we can reasonably expect, would be a subsidy.
If you're looking at this with a two-year frame of reference, over the summer, we will be in the black. So there are opportunities to make adjustments, and we have some time. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, right?
You do.
We have some time to make adjustments based on what happens in the marketplace, and those adjustments may not result in DCE being certainly not in the red this year, and maybe not very much more in the red next year.
Yeah, and I come back to this, I get it. I'm not focused as much on whether we'll be in the red or not, or Palm Springs will be in the red. I'm focused on that we're making a commitment by setting rates at under 10%. We are making a commitment that there will be a subsidy. It may not put us in the red, but it will certainly take away net revenues that would otherwise go into the reserve on behalf of Palm Springs.
Not necessarily. One option is that we don't subsidize, that we don't.
But if we're setting rates at under 10, isn't that a
commitment?
You don't have to subsidize. Right. You can have them pay the same increase.
Right.
That decision hasn't been made.
That's really the question. Do the CareFera people...
Them meaning the CareFera folks,
Right? And they'll still get 30% off on their total bill, so their rates will go up, you know, under 10% as well.
Okay.
Or do we want to say we're going to use other funds to do it. And we can always increase our rates above 10%. That's the other option to do it. So we still have all those options in a month. Right?
And you could
have, sort of saying that for this month, this is what we're saying, and we may change it next month,
and
which we could do.
You could enroll them into the Saver product as well. Care
for that one, I would want to look into.
Yeah, that was a question I had, but
I'm not sure about that one.
But we should know that as well before the 30th, right? Can we say we're going to put them automatically in that and let them choose to opt up? I mean, just so we know all the options, right? And then we can make this uninformed.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to presuppose a subsidy.
No, I don't think we are.
Decision today, so I would echo Jonathan's savvy spirit comment.
Okay. Okay. You do need us to set a rate.
Yes.
Which we can change.
Yes.
So what we need a motion. Under 10, should we just, you want a specific number?
Sure.
Or do you want
Jeff,
just under 10%?
A specific,
or do you just want less than 10%?
I think less than 10% is
okay.
Fine.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we have a motion.
Then you want to make that motion?
Sure. So the motion will be that we set rates at less than 10% above Edison's regular
default rate. Probably their default.
Then Edison's default rate. Our default rate will be no more than 10%. Edison's default rate. Now, should we add into the motion and less than Edison's green rate? Just so as people read that, they're realizing that we're still keeping it less than Edison's green rate.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I think part of our outreach has been to show that not only does it give customers a choice, but if they choose carbon-free,
it's
a savings over that same choice.
Mm-hmm. Right. And actually, both products are going to be less than Edison's comparable products.
Yeah,
that's what we want to say.
So I think that's important from an overall DC standpoint.
Right. Because we're keeping both products under Edison's comparable rates.
Yeah.
Going back to all the good stuff we're doing.
I also think it's important that we, particularly outside this room, that we specifically say this is applicable to Palm Springs.
Yes. For this year.
Yeah. I know there's a motion, so do you want to second it?
Sure, I'll second.
So there's a second. And just a follow-up question that I meant to ask earlier, the decision now for the Palm Springs launch does not bind the other two member communities, should they elect to launch in the future?
No.
Because we could have a choice of launching at the Desert City, and rates would be set again.
The rates would be set separately for each city.
Yeah, let's cross that bridge.
Yeah.
But I know, and if we get to it.
But in multi-city CCAs, you definitely see different cities have different default products.
Yes.
And the group sets the rates for each.
So there could be a different product mix and rate for one or both of the other cities if they so chose.
And I'm not going there. I don't intend to do that. But again, anticipating possible questions, what I'm hearing is we're not bound. Whether we subsidize, don't subsidize, whatever Palm Desert Cathedral City may or may not do in the future, we're not bound by the action taken today on behalf of Palm Springs.
You're asking staff, you're asking the wrong person. It depends on the three of you.
Right.
So the three of you could determine that there'll be the exact same product offering in the other two cities or not.
Right.
I suspect each of you will defer to the interest of each of the cities.
So what I'm hearing, we're not bound. By the result of this action. As you said, Tom, we will collectively choose if we want
Okay. I mean, the main reason we need to set something now is for the promotion of the materials that are being sent out, and we can change rates next month, every month, if we want it.
Got it.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Just to make sure we have it on the record, I know we've been focused on 100%. You are setting rates for the Saver as well.
Yeah.
Why don't you have a separate motion that the recommendation is that Desert Saver shall be offered at a discount to the equivalent.
I think that was in the motion. You want a separate motion?
I didn't hear it, but I thought your focus was on...
Right, but then I added the second, but we can do it in a separate motion.
Okay, if it was added...
For you?
Yeah, set rates less than 10% than SCE's default rate and less than SCE's green rate.
Right. Oh, I thought I also said, and the Desert Saver will be less than Edison's default rate.
Then you did say it, and let's run the vote again.
Okay. So
second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
And we will
Yeah.
Correct.
No.
My recollection, just to be so it's
all good. Okay. Next item is net energy metering program for Desert Community Energy.
Good afternoon, DCE Board. My name is Sean, and I'll be presenting on net energy metering. So currently, if you have solar on your home or business, you're part of SEE's NEM program. And if you produce excess solar, you get a monthly credit. And on your annual true-up date, you get a yearly payout if you're eligible. This compensation rate is updated monthly. So this is based on an 18th month look back. Over the last 12 months, it's fluctuated between 3.5 to 5 cents per kilowatt hour. And there would be a NEM program regardless of whether we launched one or not for DCE. To give a little background, in June 2018, the board approved a NEM program at parity with SEE, and DCE was put on hold, so NEM was also put on hold at that time. In December 2019, the board asked staff to revisit the net energy metering program. So at a glance, some numbers. The city of Palm Springs has almost 4,000 customers. This is based on 2019, the latest data. The SEE rate is the same as the market rate, which is currently 3.5 cents per kilowatt hour, based on January 2020. Based on some 2017 data, we were able to estimate that the hard costs for excess solar for Palm Springs NEM customers would be about $170,000. Now, this would be a net zero cost because of the fact that we would be buying this energy anyways from the market, so the net cost would be zero. And after talking with some solar consultants and our own consultants, TEA and Don Day, and we determined that May would be the best month to launch because during the summer you produce the most energy, during the winter you're using the least, and then when May comes around, it gives the customers the best chance to get the most money for what they've saved up and then start on a clean slate to approve for the next 12 months. Now I want to point out that we can launch sooner if the board decides to do that. But some considerations for why it might be a good idea to do a conservative launch timeline would be that it would give us a chance to continue to build up our financial reserves. There may be some changes coming from
this. Can I ask a question on financial reserves, just while we're on it? Why? So if the net cost is nothing, right, why does it impact our financial reserves?
I think the main reason is that you can just, it gives you an opportunity to focus on that and not start other programs that, yes, it doesn't cost you money, but you're also not making money from it necessarily. So
it's just it's a wash.
Yeah.
Right? So if it's a zero net cost, I don't see how it really changes our financial reserves at all.
Sure.
So that one didn't make sense to me. So if there's another explanation, great. If not, I don't see that as a relevant.
Yeah.
Right.
Can I jump in
for
a sec? I think, Sean, I think you guys are basically right. If it's priced at SCE, which is a look back on historical market, it really is kind of a point of indifference. There are some administrative costs, you know, associated with this, but those are probably relatively small. I think the other piece of this, too, and some of this ties back, at least in my mind, to the previous discussion where there's, you know, multiple moving pieces. Everybody knows that there's inherently risk in starting a brand new business enterprise, and so just trying to narrow down, you know, how many moving parts you've got. The other challenge is, in theoretically, while it all makes sense that it should be a point of indifference, until here recently, we have not, and actually still to this day, we don't have the NEM generation and the NEM customer loads broken out separately for historical data. What we've received from Edison is just historical net loads from customers. So it's whatever their consumption was, a NEM customer's consumption is, net of the NEM generation. That's what we see. And during hours that a NEM customer is actually putting net generation onto the grid, we see zeros. We don't see what that amount is. So some of this, too, is just lack of data and feeling like theoretically, yeah, it all makes sense. We're either going to buy from the market, we're going to buy from the NEM customer at 3.5 cents, but without that data, there's just a little bit of unease as well about something unforeseen to make pop up. That's the concern.
Okay. And the other two points are there may be some other alternative paths to solar goals, such as offering a rebate for solar or for battery storage. And finally, that there would be a NEM program regardless of whether we started one or not. So again, these are just considerations, but we could launch sooner if you decided to. And so our recommendation is to either wait on launching a NEM program or to launch a NEM program in May 2021 at parity with SEE, or as I said before, you know, that can be moved up.
So one other question. Is this also fits in the, this is, again, all new. Does this have to be decided today? Let's wait till February and after I can get some input from council and the community.
Well, by taking no action, we're certainly not launching this part of it immediately.
Right.
So by default, we're kind of
I think,
if we decide in February, can we still launch in May of this year versus if we decide today?
I would want to just double check with Calpine on that. You can certainly set aside the NEM customers as a group and make a separate enrollment decision on them. I would just want to verify with Calpine just the minimum amount of timing that needs to go into that. So if a decision were deferred until February, does that still allow sufficient time for them to work with Edison to enroll those customers in April? I'm not sure, or if that would push it out another month. Well, I guess we're already talking about
it. We discussed it a little bit because the recommendation was the end of May, and part of the consideration is just the 60-day notice period. We'd have to, for May, we'd obviously have to get those notices out in March and April.
Seems like that's not a problem.
Well, let me ask another question for my colleagues up here. Given it's comes through as customers, if you have no preference, we could do a motion that whatever the council decides on January 30th, which will save a couple weeks, if it turns out that matters. Unless you have feelings about whether solar goes to them now or in a year.
I understand that, but I'm a little uncomfortable kind of deferring that authority or that decision to other than the DC board. I don't have a problem making a decision or a non-decision, but subject to approval, or to hold an emergency session if otherwise necessary. I want to make sure my understanding is accurate. If somebody has rooftop solar and they're already participating in the NEM program through Edison, so they're not going to lose an opportunity to be part of NEM. It's just whether that'll be essentially administered through DCE, continue to be administered through Edison. So the ratepayer is not being hurt either way.
That's correct.
Okay.
But those folks, that's a good question, are they in DCE otherwise? So let's say most of the year I'm not covering my entire bill, right? So if I don't, but I'm still in the program, so I would still say Edison for the rest of my bill for another year?
So if the board chooses to not move forward with the NEM program in May 2020 and chooses to defer it to May 2021, the NEM customers that are currently Edison NEM customers will remain Edison NEM customers.
And to me, that's the issue because you have close to 4,000 customers who are the most likely to want to be 100% carbon-free. I think only 7 of them are because no one knows they could have an Edison Green project. So we're going to lose. It's going to change our percentages. It's going to change people who are doing 100% carbon-free, which actually produces more of our reserves than the Desert Saver folks, and we're just losing those people. And that, to me, is not a good choice unless there was a real reason to wait. And I haven't so far heard one that strikes me as overwhelming. But, but those are the questions, we have that we're trying to grapple with. So that's my concern is...
Are you saying them customers would not be able to offer 100% carbon-free?
Correct.
They
would not be enrolled in DCE at all.
I did not understand
that.
So they wouldn't have the option. So I'm curious about the way the option language is worded, where it says under option one, and, in my experience, typically I would defer to the staff recommendation on something like this, but I haven't heard a compelling reason to want to do that yet, but the language around until benefits can be assessed or other solar option can be explored, can you help explain that to me in more detail? So maybe quantify that. What does that really mean?
Jeff, do you want to touch on that?
Yeah, so what other CCAs have done is added some kind of a premium or of a kicker over and above what the investor-owned utilities are doing. Mm-hmm. So like Clean Power Alliance, I think, uses the same wholesale credit as Edison, but then they put 10% on top of it.
They give people more money.
An additional inducement to do that. Right. So that's what that, I think, more than anything is getting at. And then it becomes, well, there's a cost associated mm-hmm. with that 10%, because if you're just doing it at straight parity with the market, well, then, you know, mm-hmm. except for some administrative costs, you really are at a point of indifference. But as soon as you put a premium on, well, now you are paying something over and above just mm-hmm. what your alternative cost is. And then before you made that commitment, though, what are other options that may be available? I mean, one of the things we talked about was, you know, providing a rebate for batteries, for example. So maybe existing solar customers that don't have a battery offer some kind of incentive there to do that, just as one example.
So it strikes me that since we're not really discussing any other expenses at this point or giving people something, there doesn't seem to be a real reason not to start in May of this year that I've heard. So unless I'm missing that, I'd be comfortable moving that without needing to go back to council. Now, if there's something we're missing, but I haven't heard a real reason not to start in May of 2020 yet. Yeah. 4,000 people will be 100% carbon free on our program is a good thing.
It appears there's not a substantial reason not to start in May. And what I would suggest, given I know you do want to brief your council, I know the rates are more substantial of an issue than them. What you could do is direct staff to come back at your next meeting with a May, preferably late May, start on the NEM program and discuss related factors associated with that. It appears because what will happen is the NEM customers, like your chairman, will not get an enrollment notice on February 1st. Presumably, they will get one on March 1st, and that's okay. We could assume that the board will be starting in May, but you could have a provisional motion today to come back with more details about the program at the next meeting. It gives the council a chance to consider them.
Yeah, I mean, unless there is, since I think we sort of talked about that in our last meeting, unless there's a downside to just doing the straight same parity with Edison, I'm comfortable on where council is.
Yeah, and if we're going to do outreach,
right, I'd rather start.
I mean, those 4,000 customers need to know whether
absolutely
they're going to be part of it.
So
that's I'm fine. Your call.
I'm fine with that. We're looking at our sustainability manager. It's fine with it too, right? I mean, because we talked about the importance. One thing council said is they wanted them part of this, so I don't have an issue.
Yeah, I would just say that you talked about delaying the notice for NEM customers. I would just include some statement in there in your letter, because then you're having to issue a whole separate letter and all that. I mean, it just seems like streamlined communication would just say, you know.
Well, if we do it today, right, can't we just add one line?
Yeah.
Solar NEM customers will. We're part of this problem. It's the exact same. Right. Through DC. Automatically, we'll transfer to DC.
We already would have planned to send a separate energy metering letter. Yeah. We have several different.
They get a separate.
Okay.
There are several.
Okay, then that's fine.
Courtesy notices that go to several customer classes.
Got it.
And we may be required to wait 30 days based on the time required. So
I would say that's the question I get the most.
Yeah.
By the way, because those are the people who are most engaged and know that it's happening and pay attention to it. So I'm fine with a motion that we NEM customers are enrolled in DCE like every other customer starting in May.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Just to clarify, the other customers are being enrolled, are launching in April.
Yes, that's why I use May. Yeah. Okay. Like the other customers.
I see.
Okay. If that's clear.
Now it is. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Next item, 7D. So these are informational items. Utility discount program update. Karen Farah.
You do have item D.
Okay,
6D.
Mr. Chair, this is a brief item at the last meeting. Councilmember Jonathan asked about some of the programs that are being offered by other community choice programs, and so we can continue this discussion at future meetings, but just to give you kind of a very brief overview of some of the kinds of things that are being done, this is a quick summary. One of the perhaps most popular programs that we've seen from a number of community choice agencies is an electric vehicle incentive, and if you think about it, that makes a lot of sense. If you're going to push more electricity use and an investment in an EV future, it's something that Southern California Edison is doing as well. And this is an example from some of the community choice programs that have been doing this perhaps for the longest time. I think Sonoma Clean Power up in Sonoma County was the first to launch that, and they do have a program currently that involves EV charging stations for homes and a $4,500 rebate. These rebates are mostly offered to low and moderate income or income qualified customers, and I think the idea of that is for those folks it may be more challenging to purchase an electric vehicle, but some of the rebates are targeted at purchasing used vehicles so that it could be actually a pretty affordable opportunity for folks to come into being an electric vehicle driver. In the case of Sonoma, they have already handed out about 1,100 electric vehicle rebates, and they do have a goal of 10,000. And in their case, it's all wrapped into an effort, like I say, to increase the electricity demand and customer demand. Marin Clean Energy, the oldest community choice program, similarly has a program for income qualified, and they've actually focused some of their funds on multifamily and workplace, so there's a rebate for the customer to purchase a vehicle, and then there's also the EV charging rebate, which would target multifamily and workplace locations. They budgeted about $1.5 million. Now, in most cases, we could explore this further as we start talking about programs, but these are programs that are generally funded by revenues that have come in and been accumulated by the CCA. Lancaster here in Southern California has also an EV program. Theirs is a $3,000 rebate, and they have just announced this program, Ready, Set, Charge, with $250,000 allocated or committed to that for that program. So that's one example of a program that has been used by a number of community choice agencies throughout. Lancaster has also been very active in putting together some other programs. They did receive some funding actually directly from the CPUC, and they have an energy advisor. It's like a free home survey that focuses on what are the things that a customer could do to increase their energy efficiency, and then they do have some financing and things that would help them to pay for those. There's not actually a direct rebate that's in place right now to, say, $50 off of the cost of an more efficient air conditioner, but they're trying to bring that forward. And another one is something that actually we've done here as part of our energy partnership in years past with Southern California Edison, direct install with small commercial, where they basically go out to a small commercial business and do a brief survey, but they will, as part of that program, install some energy efficiency measures like lighting, sometimes to do with refrigeration, depending on the business. So actually put some measures into, they'll upgrade the status of those small businesses, and that might be something that we could look at for a future DCE program. Marin Clean Energy has some programs with smart thermostats. A lot of theirs, again, target multifamily properties, free surveys, and then they have, alongside of those surveys, some free measures that account for a smaller amount of money, but they do install some energy efficiency measures in those multifamily buildings. And then another one with Sonoma Clean Power, they focused a lot on education. They actually have a system where there's a home energy toolkit that's available at local libraries. It has a lot of information for folks and some tools, some of the things that you might need to measure, you know, the lighting in your home or office and that sort of thing. And then they're also doing quite a bit on workforce development with students and incorporating those programs in student education. Monterey Bay Clean Power, which actually just launched in the last, I think they launched in 2018, has a program which is in partnership with Grid Alternatives. Some of the cities here, of course, have already worked with Grid Alternatives, and they are offering similar programs with no-cost solar, and that has a very strong job training program, if you're familiar with Grid. And we've got a good relationship with Grid Alternatives, and it's some conversation we've had with them as we go forward. We definitely want to explore some opportunities we might have for a partnership with them. So that's just a very quick overview of some of the kinds of things, and there's obviously a lot of different things we can start to look into as we get to the stage where there's revenue that could be spent on some of those local programs.
Any questions?
I have two very quick questions. I know we're getting close to BCS championship game kickoff here. So, very quickly, number one, you mentioned grants. At some point, will we have the capacity to seek out grants that may accomplish some of these benefits that through DC that might not otherwise be available through Edison?
Yes, and I think, you know, we focused our attention at this time on the launch for Palm Springs and all that, but once we get past that step, there is an option of submitting to the Public Utilities Commission an application for energy efficiency funds. We did talk about that at a past meeting. And then there are various grants, the Energy Commission and others. So those are things that we're keeping an eye on and would start to look into as we get past some of the first steps.
Absolutely. The other quick question is, just out of curiosity, I read recently about a community that built solar panel field and then leased out those panels to its residents so that the cost to acquire solar energy was much cheaper, you know, to get into it. Have there been any CCAs that have done that or something similar to that?
I'm
not sure. Yeah, community solar project. I know traditional munis that have done it. I would have to look if any CCAs have done it.
If you do, and you know, you can report the next one. I mean, we're just such a natural for it. I'm just curious.
I think that the community solar is something that the Community Advisory Committee has wanted to talk about, and especially the chair. and that's something we'd like to explore further. It's essentially what you described.
Maybe we can do it.
We can look into see what have the Community Advisory Committee help us do some research on what's being done elsewhere.
And where we're different than other cities while you're here is, right, we have a lot of wind generated, and then our geographic area and the potential if that could be supplied, right, this, in a similar way, that would might make sense for us.
I just had one comment on mine. Your carbon-free energy is 8.8 cents. What's in that charge? It can't just be the energy itself, because the market for renewables is about 3.5 to 4 cents. Is there other number in there? I think you have a better deal for people than looks to me like you have a better deal for the consumer than this says. Is the 0.884 cents for generation during green, is that estimated cost just of energy in the market, or is it adding other charges?
No, that's adding in other charges and stuff. And so, for example, one of the other requirements that all load-serving entities have is to procure resource adequacy capacity. So
they haven't told you how much yet.
They have not told us that. We've got to, we can estimate what it'll be, but we don't know.
Is that a penny a kilowatt?
I'm not sure what the resource adequacy
is.
Yeah, I'd have to.
So that would get you up to 5.5 cents.
Yeah, and then the other thing, too, is the solar is not there 24-7, so you have to buy from other sources during other times.
Gas is cheaper now. If it's a peaking plant, you're buying.
I don't want that offline.
I just think that maybe you've got a better deal here than you think.
Great. Nothing else on this. Let's move to our information items. I think the first one is attendance, so that's self-explanatory. The financial report, any questions or comments on that?
Yep.
Okay, Community Advisory Committee report.
Yeah, just all right. Information.
Yeah, just information. In terms of same thing, questions. And I think we've covered Care Fair well enough. Mm-hmm. Okay, public comment on non-agenda items. Does anyone want to speak on non-agenda items? Fred?
Doing this for quite a while now, but I certainly don't have all the answers. I don't claim to that I do. But in terms of community solar, I think if the CCA either contracts for the power from a relatively large solar project or builds one, that you're going to get the same benefit as if you go to community solar and allocate to each person's house, but it comes through your entity. Because you always will have a bigger, better price than a consumer or a guy with a factory. You just always will. And the other comment is, There's going to be pushback from the utilities on all of this, and the attack will be based on price. And the large commercial users, who are the people who will make this, whose approval will make this just be wonderful, and whose disapproval will make your life tough, are looking at cost. Just they have to. So the more cross-subsidizing you do at an early stage, the more dangerous it is, because taking money from one guy's pocket to another person's pocket. And none of the goals that I've heard of today are bad ideas, they're laudable, but you might want to bring them on board in a more deliberate way so that you don't end up having a guy that runs a big hotel saying, wait a minute, I'm subsidizing somebody that I wasn't before, and therefore falls into the trap the utilities are going to set for you, which is you cost too much.
Thank you.
I wanted to say that I attended the Palm Desert study session last week, and in fact, I found it to be quite uninspiring myself. And you know, I want to recognize Councilman Jonathan for his continuous, thoughtful approach to this examination of what's possible with CCAs. But and I have to say that given the astonishing climate change effects that we see on a daily basis, fires that are being caused by transmission lines dropping, and killing more people than any range fire in the state has done so far. You've now got blackouts that are required during weather events, and really a utility industry, private utility industry, IOUs in the state that are viewed by many as still living in a business model that's in a death spiral. And yet at that meeting, the DCE's efforts really came down to, its highest calling being saving residents a small amount of money and possibly providing a cleaner blend of energy. I wrote that down during that meeting. And I just think in the long-term governance of this organization, DCE, that JPAs really work best when you've got a commonality of interests and cooperation there. And I'm just concerned that maybe what would be best for DCE to really move forward and really make progress, and it has that capability, would be for Palm Desert, if that's the value that they seek of this CCA effort, that they should just extract themselves from it and make it easier on everybody else. I think a lot of these government issues have been raised today, and I just think it's a big issue that needs to be addressed.
Okay. Thank you. Any other public comment on non-agenda items? Seeing none, announcements. The next DC board meeting will be February 13th, 2020 at 2:30 p.m. We're going to do that in Palm Springs. The location.
I'm sorry, that's
Thursday, February 13th.
Yeah, because that's council meeting day for us.
No, that's not a Monday.
No.
So I have in mind
February 10th.
I have it on the 17th, which is President's Day. So did it get moved to the 10th? Or
was that one of those dates that?
Is that? It's a flesh state. Oh, I have it on the 24th.
So do I.
I think we changed it.
I think the 4th. We do have it on the 24th.
Is that too late for a...
Because of holiday,
I think. Yeah.
No.
We're fine with that.
We're fine.
Okay, if we need you a special meeting, we will.
February 24th in Palm Springs at a... Right. Preferably at this spot, but we'll let you know if it's good.
The Rollin.
At the Rollin. Sure.
Yeah. If they go 100% carbon free.
It's the 24th.
Okay, nothing else? Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.
It's pretty substantive.
It's not gonna much for me to solar guy at my house.
Zapier inspired
see
now.
See if I can take care.
You too.
Good seeing you.
Good to see you, John.
Take care.
Bye, Jeff. Take care.
I'll see you next year, John.
Thank you.
See you. Someone just said during the playoffs, they said, don't text me. So I did. I turned my phone off, and I turned it on, and I had text. Because I knew that would happen, but I couldn't. You know, I always can.
Meeting adjourns at 5:03.
You know what I mean?